Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hello, my little crime lanterns. Thank you so much for tuning in today. I have a brilliant guest for you. It is Sean Burke. He is of Sean Burke Show on Instagram, on TikTok. I'm sure you know him for his brilliant, brilliant sketches. Sean is very, very funny, very, very smart, and just a lovely guest to have on. It's a really interesting story as well, so I hope you're going to enjoy it. Sean is also on a TV show at the moment, which is just getting rave reviews. It is absolutely gas. It is called No Worries If Not on RT, and it is also available on the RT player for any of our international listeners. And he is one of a rake of hilarious Irish comedians on this TV show. So we've got Justine Stafford, Emma Doran, Killian Sunderman, Michael Fry, and of course Sean Burke. Well worth checking out when you're done listening to this episode. If you have enjoyed Crimeland, I would love if you could recommend us to a friend. I am always getting DMs from people who tell me that a friend recommended Crimeland to them. And you know what? It makes my heart burst. Forget the internet. Recommending to a friend is how we are going to grow this little community of Crimelanders. So I really, really appreciate it. And without further ado, here's your episode. Enjoy. Crimeland. My name is Julie J, and this week I'm talking to the brilliant
Sean Burke
about John Wilkes Booth and the killing of Abraham Lincoln. Sean, do you know what I love? I love the fact that I got that intro just so spot on straight away.
Yeah, only one take as well. That's what, if anybody takes from this episode, that's what they should take. You don't need any rehearsal whatsoever.
There's no script required, Sean, over
not
here.
At all.
Sean, thank you so much for doing this. Just, you know, in case you think I'm incredibly rude, I do a little kind of obituary for my guests at the start, but I record it when they're not here. Because let's face it, we're Irish. Nobody needs to hear the good words. So I will do a really gushing intro and I'm going to insert that at the end in case you think I'm a really terrible host.
So Sean, who the hell are you? No, that's really considerate of you, actually, because I keenly observed that is torture to an Irish person to be forced to sit through and listen to endless compliments. Honestly, I can't think of anything worse.
Well, do you know what's so funny? Because I, in Edinburgh, we were just chatting about Edinburgh there. One day somebody said to me, you know, this really lovely audience member said, can I just ask why you don't do meet and greets at the end? But for Irish people, I just can't imagine anything worse.
Like, no.
I am just standing there when everyone says, really enjoyed it, really enjoyed it. I mean, what do you say to that? I'd have to just turn around and say, I hate myself. Like, I just couldn't handle that.
You'd just be arguing with people like, no, you're wrong. No, no.
No, it was awful. It was shit.
Yeah, that was
I'm
what are you
sorry.
Talking about? Also, the idea of a meet and greet implies that I'm like, oh, yeah, yeah, people definitely want to come and talk to me.
Know.
You know, that also feels like a step too far. I'd be like, oh, I've wasted so much of your time already. I'll just leave. You know, it feels like, no, not in my nature.
It does feel a bit presumptuous. Do you know what I mean? Like, just, you know, I'm doing a meet and greet.
I presume you want to hear more. No, that's not how we do it. No.
Oh, Gus, Sean, if it's okay, I'm going to dive right in. How does that sound? And thank you so much for being my guest today, by the way. I'm just so thrilled to have you on.
It's my absolute pleasure. By all means, dive right in. I can't wait to hear more.
Diving right in. So as Will Smith once sang, born in Bel Air, Maryland. So this is a different Bel Air. This is the one in Maryland. Did you watch The Wire, by the way, Sean? As I was reading through this again, obviously in preparation for the podcast this morning, every time I see the name Maryland, I just think of The Wire.
Really? Yeah, I didn't. You know, it passed me by, or at least, well, I was probably... I don't know when it...
Go on, say it, Sean.
I was probably too young when it first aired on television. I'm sorry, okay? I can't help when I was born.
Oh, you know what? Okay, the listener, there's no visual, but my fist is literally in my mouth here. Quite literally. No, but that's fair enough. I would say it's one that I think it stands the test of time really well. So it's not a nice little box set to get into if you fancy it.
Yeah.
But that is set in Baltimore, Maryland. So this is Bel Air, Maryland, not too far away.
Okay.
And John Wilkes Booth was born into this family in the 19th century. And he was supposed to be really charismatic, really handsome. And he was a member of a famous acting family. So this acting family were, I guess, like they were kind of a Hollywood acting family before Hollywood was even a thing as such. So they were really bright stars of American theater. John was the 9th of 10 children born to his legendary father, who ironically was called Junius Brutus Boots. And of course, the irony being that he was named for the Roman senator Junius Brutus, the man who assassinated Julius Caesar.
Okay. I mean, what did they see in that baby? This baby is going to betray someone someday. Can we think of any famous traitors?
I mean, Brutus, even the name, it just, I feel, yeah, they knew something was coming down the line. So the dad, Brutus, was a member of this theater hall of fame in the States and is widely considered to be the greatest tragic actor in the first half of the 19th century. His name and face were known around the world. And then he had another son. So this would have been John's brother, Edwin. And Edwin was also a really, really famous actor. He would have been in the Hall of Fame and also was considered to be the greatest Shakespearean actor of the second half of the century. So this family were kind of like, I guess you could say they were definitely a big deal in terms of American arts. Like they were, you know, they were quite well known.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
like many Americans, John became obsessed with mounting tensions around the country in relation to slavery. So he became really, really obsessed with this issue because, of course, this was a very tempestuous time in American history. And we'll get to that in a moment in terms of the context. But he even joined Richmond, Virginia, of course. He joined a white militia in Richmond, Virginia, so that he could watch the execution of John Brown, who was an abolitionist who tried to incite a slave uprising in 1859. So it's safe to say that John had some very extreme political views. Now, for a bit of context, Sean, the American Civil War, of course, was fought between the United States of America and the Confederate States, and the Confederate States being a collection of 11 Southern states that left the Union in 1860-1861. The conflict began primarily as a result of course, a long-standing disagreement over the institution of slavery. Mm-hmm. The central issue dividing the North and the South was slavery, with the Confederates looking to preserve slavery while the Union in the North moved towards its abolition. Abraham Lincoln, of course, heralded the necessity for its abolition and hence why he drew the ire of the Southern Confederates. Now, I have to confess, and this is really, really terrible maybe to admit this, given the topic that we're doing for Crimeland, I did not actually watch Daniel Day-Lewis's Lincoln. Did you watch that, Sean?
I did actually watch that. Yeah, I remember it very clearly. It was a very solemn, slow movie. And he did a very Daniel Day-Lewis voice. You know, he was like, "I am Abraham Lincoln," and it was something like that. Because that's what he does. He picks a crazy voice and he sticks with it. That's his secret.
He does stick. And I wonder, in terms of, like, you know, obviously Daniel Day, he's very Gaiety School of Acting. Shout out to all my Gaiety School of Acting heads out there. Is he still making shoes in Italy? What's he up to these days?
Like, no, basically whatever he wants, I guess. He said he retired, didn't he? Well, I'm he'll come back.
Yeah, do you remember he retired and he was making shoes in Italy, and then Martin Scorsese found him and said, "Please do the Gangs of New York." And he came back, for that. Always laugh because imagine, like, you're walking down the streets of Rome. I'm sure he wasn't in Rome, but wherever he was, and you break a heel, your little kitten heel goes and says, "Do you know what? There's a cobbler's right here. I'm just going to get this heel fixed." And it's Daniel Day-Lewis.
I know. Yeah, that would be, I mean, it'd be a nice memory from the holiday.
And P.S. kitten heels. I have such an aversion to kitten heels. I really think they could make a horror film just about kitten heels because they're neither here nor there, Sean.
I'll be honest, I don't know what kitten heels are, but you know what? I'll agree with you. Just
you know what? You're better off. You're better off, Sean. It's basically, you know, those tiny, keep an eye out for them, Sean, because I'm sure there's a lot of them floating around London. Mm-hmm. They're those tiny little heels.
Yeah.
Is it a heel? Is it not a heel? Who knows? It's a kitten heel.
Right. Okay. They're neither here nor there, like you say. Just need to.
So Daniel Day, he did play Lincoln. I heard he was very, very good. I actually, you know, I've heard that he could be a bit of a big actor maybe in the future. Daniel Day Lewis.
Hot take there.
Heard it here first. I think there's big things ahead for Daniel Day Lewis.
Well, keep an eye out for the name Daniel Day Lewis, whether it's for fixing your shoes or for casting a movie.
And also beware of kitten heels. So Abraham Lincoln, and my apologies, because we do have a lot of listeners in the States, and I'm sure, no more than me saying I have my fist in my mouth, I'm sure their both fists are in their mouth. But this is purely for, like, I think maybe things have changed with the history course, Sean, but I know when I was in school in Ireland, like, we really didn't do much about American history.
It was different for me, though, actually. Funnily enough, I'm so sorry to contradict you, but I did it for the Leaving Cert, which is like the last exams you do for your American listeners when you leave secondary school. And we had a whole book dedicated specifically to American history, but it was I think it was from like the 20th century, though. Maybe, I can't remember. But
do you know what? Sorry, now you're spot on, because I love that you did history for your Leaving Cert. I also did history, loved it as a subject, hence why I'm doing Crimeland, I suppose. But I actually, now that you say it, you're right, 20th century American history was a big thing, but 19th century Civil War stuff, I think, wasn't as much of a focus for us.
Yeah, I remember, like, I'm pretty sure JFK was on the cover, and I'm pretty sure there was like six chapters solely about the Vietnam War. That's all I remember from it.
Yeah, but that's, I guess, you know, that when I say that's the interesting stuff, you know, I don't want any of, you know, I don't want any of my confederates switching off, but like, okay, from an outsider perspective, like, I mean, the whole Civil War thing, when I say it seems, morally speaking, it seems to be fairly straightforward. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And plus, I think the fact we didn't spend much time focusing on American history might be something to do with, like, we had our own shit going on.
Yeah. Of the other book we had was solely devoted to home rule in Ireland.
And a lot of, you know, a lot of 1798 fellas in cropped trousers with pitchforks. Like, you know, that was the vibe. So I guess the Civil War seems fairly tame in comparison to all that we had going on. So Abraham Lincoln, and again, my apologies, this is really for, I guess, the Irish history students like myself who skipped this chapter. Abraham Lincoln, of course, was a self-taught lawyer, legislator, and very vocal opponent of slavery. And he was elected the 16th president of the United States in November 1860, shortly before the outbreak of the Civil War. He proved to be a really good military strategist and a very savvy leader. His Emancipation Proclamation paved the way for slavery's abolition, while his Gettysburg Address stands as one of the most famous speeches in American history. So I think it's safe to say, Sean, like, he is, does seem to be an American president who is quite loved by American people.
Yeah, yeah, that's definitely that. He seems quite iconic and kind of fabled in that way, like the stuff you were just talking about. Yeah, and with his top hat as well, he almost seems like a kind of almost mythical figure, you know.
That is very true. Actually, the top hat, confessions, I don't even have those words in this story I wrote up. So well done.
Thank you. How
can we get through without mentioning the top? I think anyone who has a top hat, there's just a sense of occasion to them always.
Yeah, I think it might even be something bigger than a top hat. I think there's another name for it because it's so tall.
It's a bit of a Willy Wonka hat, isn't it?
It is very much so. But hey, that was the style at the time.
Listen, I prefer, give me a Willy Wonka hat to Kitten Heel any day, is all I have to say. So when the Civil War broke out between Confederates and Union soldiers, John Wilkes Booth fell firmly on the side of the Confederacy. Though he never joined the Confederate Army, his mother begged him not to. He was a bit of a mammy's boy, by the way. So his mammy really kind of babied him quite a lot. So she begged him not to join the army. And he was like, okay, I won't. Which kind of reminds me of, you know, when there's like a fight happening in a chipper and one fella's saying, hold me back. And you're like, ugh, there's a bit of that.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, you're not going to do it anyway, so...
Yeah, you know. There's a bit of, I would have joined the army, but my mom was like, don't do it. So I was like, okay, if you insist. A whack of that off John. Mm-hmm. He was still, you know, very obviously, very much kind of an ardent Confederate supporter. And he publicly denounced the Lincoln administration on several occasions. Indeed, much of Booth's vitriol was saved for the president, Lincoln, he said, who, quote, fancied himself a king. Lincoln's, quote, appearance, his pedigree, his low course jokes and anecdotes, his vulgar smiles, his frivolity are a disgrace to the seat he holds. And John wrote that in December 1864 in a letter. Nothing infuriated him more than what he saw Lincoln speak on the 11th of April 1865. Then John was dismayed to hear that the president was suggesting that he might extend voting rights for black people. So this tells us a lot about the type of person that John Wilkes Booth was, because this is what really infuriated him. And he was heard saying, this is the last speech he will ever make. So that was the quote.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well.
Ominous. Yes. Ominous, Sean.
Yeah, foreshadowing.
So foreshadowing indeed. Mm-hmm. So John launched a plan to not only kill Lincoln, but also to topple the whole Union government. So he was going all the way with this.
Oh, wow.
Just 3 days after this speech, John sent killers, assassins, to kill William Seward, who was the Secretary of State, and Andrew Johnson, the Vice President. Lincoln, he decided he would kill himself. When he heard that Lincoln was due to attend the theatre in Washington, D.C., he saw this as an opportunity. Now, Washington, D.C., of course, as we know, Sean, was the Union capital during the Civil War. It was home to the United States government and was a base for Union Army throughout the war. Interestingly, which is something I never thought of until I was just researching this story, Washington, D.C. was the most strategic and vulnerable city in the Union during the Civil War because it was kind of sandwiched between the Confederate state of Virginia to the west and the border slave state of Maryland to the east, which is interesting. I never thought of it like that.
Oh, right. But like its tactical position.
Yeah, just that as in it was very much sandwiched between two states that were completely polar opposites in terms of their thinking on this issue, like that they were, you know, that they were worlds apart in that way. And this was, of course, Washington, the city itself, became the first emancipated city and the country's largest and most important magnet for freed and runaway slaves. So though John's co-conspirators failed, so the two lads who he had sent to kill the Secretary of State and the Vice President, they did not succeed. John Wilkes Booth had a very different outcome. So as the president, his wife and a young couple named Henry Rathbone and Clara Harris watched a performance of the comedy My American Cousin in a Box at Ford's Theatre, Washington, D.C., John Wilkes Booth crept up behind them. He waited until the audience laughed and then fired a shot into Lincoln's head. After wrestling with Rathbone, John Wilkes Booth jumped down into the crowd, crying "Sic semper tyrannis," meaning "thus always to tyrants," and made his escape. Now, there's a few things to take away from this, Sean. First of all, I don't think this is doing anything in terms of getting people to the theatre.
No, this is, I was already on the fence, but now knowing there's a chance of being shot in the back of the head.
Yeah, I mean, it's not ideal. And especially like when you've paid for the box, you know, you've paid for the box.
Yeah, that's the worst. They paid for they really forked out for a good night, you know?
Yeah, I just feel like whatever about getting shot in the stalls, but I mean, the box.
Well, that's what
you're paying for.
That's what those lowly losers in the stalls deserve. You know what I mean?
I mean, it's all they deserve. I'm going to go so far as to say it's all they deserve, Sean. And also another, I think, a red flag. It's not one I encountered on Tinder, but I think it is one to just watch out for. Anyone who throws a bit of Latin out there.
Oh, yeah.
Can we trust them, Sean? I'm not sure.
Yeah, red flag is the word for it. And I mean, it sounds like they're on a double date as well, which is a bit, you know.
I'm not quite sure what's going on here. It's a double date vibe, which again, I feel, again, is this a generalization, Sean? But is there ever a happy ending to a double date?
No. And this is the most extreme example of that. But, you know, should be a warning nonetheless.
And I also feel like with a double date, like someone's either, it's either ending in divorce or murder.
Yeah, I mean, this was like really compacted version of the storyline, I guess, that happened the same night of the double date. Also, what's to be said for the president's security? It's come on leaps and bounds since those days.
It definitely has. I mean, I guess, you know, I suppose it has. But then when you think, I guess now obviously it was a very different setup. But JFK getting shot 100 years later. I mean, that doesn't say a lot about the security either. Now, I know that was like a moving car. There were a lot of variables there. I mean, certainly now it feels like the security is tight.
Certainly if you can just the fact that he walked in, though, I'm sure he had to do, well, I don't know, like, can you just go up and shake the president's hand in those days?
Well, I guess I suppose that's a really interesting question. Like, I mean, he certainly would have had some kind of security, but like, it's interesting, I they obviously didn't check for weapons or something going into the theater. It was lax is what we're saying.
Yeah just tickets. Well, outside of that, they weren't concerned. Go ahead.
Just checking the bags for popcorn. You have to buy the popcorn here.
Yeah, you can't bring in your own alcohol either. Come on.
You can bring in your own gun, but not your own popcorn.
That's fine. But that Nagin next to it, that has to go.
Oh, the Al Nagins. You know what? I'm so excited. This weekend, I'm spending some time with a friend of mine. I remember a few years ago, she got a very expensive bag in Brown Thomas, which again, for our American listeners, is a very fancy shop over here. And I remember going into the shop with her in the January sales, and she was she was looking to change the bag. And her reason being was that she couldn't fit a Nagin in there. And the girl at the counter was like, oh, these women have problems. I mean, she was probably right. But like, to be fair, you want to be able to squeeze in. I'm not saying you're going to bring a Nagin, but just in case you did want to bring a Nagin.
Yeah, she knows what she wants. I respect it.
So in his jump, he jumps from the box down into the stalls, and John jumped down and he broke his leg in the jump, because that's what happens when you jump from a box into a stall. So nevertheless, he managed to evade the horrified crowd. So he kind of limps on out of there, and he's got his horse waiting for him outside, which I think was the inspiration to the Rubber Bandits big hit back in the day.
Oh, it all makes sense now.
It's all coming together, Sean. This is not an accident. None of this is an accident. I want you to know that. So John then rode out to Navy Yard Bridge, where he convinced a guard to let him break curfew and leave the city, because during the Civil War, there was a curfew where people had to be in at a certain time. Mm-hmm. But he comes along, convinces the guard to let him out, and he gets out of Washington, D.C. From there, he meets up with one of his co-conspirators, David Herold. They made their way to Sir's Tavern in a place which is now called Clinton, Maryland. And they ask another conspirator, Mary Surratt, to leave them guns, binoculars and whiskey. Booth then asked me if he wanted to hear some news. The bartender would later testify. He said, "We have killed President Lincoln and Secretary Seward." In fact, neither Seward nor Lincoln were dead yet. But while Seward, who remember it was the Secretary of State, he survived. 4 days later, while Harold and Booth were on the run, Booth became the most wanted man in America with an incredible $100,000 bounty on his head. Wow. And 4 days after them going on the run, Lincoln did pass away. So this was like huge news, of course. So we've got John Wilkes Booth, we've got his co-conspirator Harold, they're on the run. And $100,000 in 19th century America is like a lot of money. Yeah. So they were just determined to get this guy.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like, did they get him?
Well,
I'm on tenterhooks now.
Let us see.
Is he still out there?
No, they were.
Because that reward
he's
is still
out there. Please be careful in theaters.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
So, though they were helped by Confederate sympathizers throughout their journey, John's not happy. Okay, so they're kind of helped throughout their journey, but he's not impressed. He's obviously in pain because he has the broken leg. Now, they had snuck off to a doctor who'd kind of set it for him, but he's still in pain with it. He's staying, and I guess not staying is a bit of an exaggeration, but he's camping out in forests and swamps. Federal troops are hot on their heels, and he's failed numerous times to cross the Potomac River. But more than that, what really pissed him off was friends who were Confederates, obviously, as well. They were bringing him newspapers, and he saw that the media were really against him and were not talking of him as the hero he believed himself to be. So he thought the Confederates would kind of say, listen, this guy is a hero. And they really very much were not saying that. And this annoyed him even more. So on the 23rd of April, himself and Harold finally made it across the Potomac River and into Virginia. The next day, they found a farm near Port Royal, Virginia. They told the farm's owner, Richard Garrett, that they were cousins, and he agreed to let them stay the night. Though Garrett later claimed that he didn't know anything about the Lincoln assassination, something about the two guys unnerved him. They were just giving him bad vibes. So he said that, yeah, you can stay, but you have to stay out in the barn. So they had to stay out in the tobacco barn. In the early hours of the 26th, Union soldiers had gotten a tip off that the two lads were hiding out in this barn. They creep up on the farmhouse, and both John Wilkes Booth and Harold, they wake up to the sound of dogs barking outside and obviously the sound of soldiers on the march. So they make to get away to do a legger, but then they realize to their horror that the Garretts thought, so these farmers, this farming family thought that basically that John and Harold would rob them. So they had locked the barn doors so that they were basically trapped inside.
Oh,
yeah.
Got him.
So Harold is like, look, I think at this point the jig is up because we're trapped. We're locked in a barn. We're surrounded by soldiers. But John said, no, I want to go down fighting. So he shouts out to the soldiers. Now, at this point, the soldiers aren't 100% that they've got their men, but they're fairly like they have had this tip and they think it could be John and Harold, but they're not 100% sure. So John shouts out to the soldiers, I've got but one leg. If you will withdraw your men in line 100 yards from the door, I will come out and fight you. So they're delighted when they hear this because they know, of course, that Lincoln's killer has an injured leg. So when he says, I've only got one leg, they're like, yes, we've got our guy.
Okay.
So a scuffle ensues and one of the soldiers ends up shooting John, who dies 5 hours later. Now, they actually really, really did not want to shoot him. So they wanted it to be very much kind of a public punishment, public trial, public execution. But yeah, in the kind of, I suppose, you know, in the scuffle, that he does end up getting shot. So he dies at 7:15 a.m. on the 26th of April, 1865, 12 days after he shot Abraham Lincoln. So during that period of time, this manhunt was on and all of America was just really obviously in this story and waiting for news. Though John died on the 26th of April, the nation was forced to grapple with his crimes in the months and years that followed. On the 7th of July, his co-conspirators, David Herold, who had been on the run with him and was in the barn that night, Mary E. Seward, Lewis Powell, and George Okay, I said that perfectly. Moving on swiftly. George Atzt, his friends, they were all hanged. And it was a public execution, big crowds came, like this was something that people wanted to see. But the tragedy of the Lincoln assassination was felt in many ways. So his successor, the Vice President Andrew Johnson, had none of Lincoln's openness to expanding voting rights to Black Americans. And, you know, very sadly, it just meant that, I guess, the case for abolition went a very different way. And people really felt the reverberations of this crime in many ways. So the fact that Andrew Johnson was not somebody advocating, you know, for voting rights and giving suffrage to Black Americans had huge implications for American history. And Lincoln, of course, was very different on that massive issue. Mm-hmm. So John is buried at his family plot in Greenmount Cemetery in Baltimore, Maryland. And this is kind of funny, Sean. So over the years, the custom is that people leave pennies on his grave, which of course is the coin that bears the likeness of Abraham Lincoln.
Of course.
So they leave pennies and it's a bit of a, you know, it's a bit of a two fingers to John Wilkes Booth, I feel. In a final, now I'm just going to leave you on this note because I think this is a really interesting twist. In another strange twist, Sean, in late 1864 or early 1865. So funnily enough, it was, so this would have been shortly before obviously this assassination of Lincoln and all the rest. Yeah. So in a strange twist, in Jersey City, Robert Lincoln, Abraham's son, was kind of caught. And you know that kind of, you know that especially because you live in London, Sean, there's always this mad surge towards the train when the train stops and everyone's trying to get on. Mm-hmm. So Robert Lincoln was trying to get on a train and he actually fell off a platform, was kind of pushed off by the crowd, and was most certainly going to be killed by an oncoming train when another man reached down, grabbed him by the coat collar and saved his life. This man would later turn out to be Edwin Booth, John's brother. Yes.
Whoa, what an insane, that's crazy.
Doesn't that give you the heebie-jeebies? So you know, the brother I mentioned, he was this, you know, really famed, acclaimed Shakespearean actor. Mm-hmm. He had no idea who Robert was when he saved him, obviously. He just thought he was a guy who fell down. And at the time, Robert Lincoln was not only relieved to be saved from an oncoming train, but was also starstruck by the encounter because he knew who Edwin was because Edwin was a famous actor. And he wrote to a friend, so this is Robert Lincoln writing to a friend, "Upon turning to thank my rescuer, I saw it was Edwin Booth, whose face was, of course, well known to me. And I expressed my gratitude to him and in doing so called him by name."
Wow.
And that is the mad story of John Wilkes Booth, the killing, and also the killing of Abraham Lincoln. It's a mad twist, though, isn't it, at the end? Bravo. I can see the heebie-jeebies.
I know, yeah. It kind of evens the score as well, in a way, in that, you know what I mean? Like one Booth killed a Lincoln and another one saved a Lincoln.
Well, actually, now that you think about it, that is just basic maths, isn't it?
That's why you invited me on this show, I presume, for Sean, the basic maths.
The reason you can't see this now, unfortunately, but Sean, I don't know if you've seen the film Good Will Hunting, but Sean has a blackboard behind his head.
Oh, whoops. Oh, did I leave that there? Oh, how embarrassing. One of my
It really helped me along. Thank you so much. It kept me linear, Sean.
Ah, you're welcome.
Sean, can I just say you're an absolute gentleman and so, so funny. Can we just give your big TV show a shout out? It is brilliant, please. If you haven't watched it already.
Thank you so much. Yeah, it's called No Worries If Not. And it is available internationally, which I find very exciting about it. So people are always asking, because myself and the other cast members, we all have background in social media making sketches. So this is our first TV sketch show, which is very exciting for us all. But, you know, of course, we have a lot of international followers too. You know, it's the way the internet goes. But you can watch it wherever you are in the world. So it's on
RT Player, mm-hmm. isn't it?
Yeah, you can even watch it live internationally. So check it out.
So RT Player, I have to say, if you are looking for Irish comedy, it's a really exciting amalgamation of people. Mm-hmm. You've got the best brains in Irish comedy. I would really recommend checking it out. And that's on RT Player. And of course, Sean, you're on the socials.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I am indeed. You can find me at Sean Burke Show across all of them, basically. Twitter and Instagram. They're probably the two I use mostly.
Have to say, I do think you are... dare I say the king. You're the Abraham Lincoln of comedy sketches, Sean. You're absolutely brilliant. So do check him out. His sketches will have you in literal pisses, especially if, like myself, you have given birth at some point. Like literal accidents happening left, right and centre. Sean, it's been such a pleasure. I'll talk to you soon.
Oh, thanks so much for having me, Julie.
Thanks, Sean. This has been a
blast. Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.